906.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. In 1921, Margaret Sanger opened the nation's first birth control clinic in Brooklyn, New York. That clinic evolved into what is now Planned Parenthood. Sanger's intent was to provide education about birth control options, sex education in general, and health care to women at a time when access to information about those things was rare. Planned Parenthood still provides these services and includes counseling and screening for cancer and HIV, health services for men, and of course, access to abortion. As controversial as birth control education might have been in the 1920s, abortion remains so today, and that is often what draws attention to Planned Parenthood. But as we've just said, their mission includes much more, and they have made North Carolina a top priority for their efforts. We're going to find out why, as well as more about the organization this hour. Cecile Richards is president of Planned Parenthood Federation of America and the Planned Parenthood Action Fund, and she joins us from the studios of WUNC in Chapel Hill. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike. Great to be here.
And incidentally, Cecile will actually be here in Charlotte for the North Carolina Women Are Watching Action Fund event tonight at the Larry Elder Gallery in South End. And ticket information about that is available on our website at WFAE.org. Also with us is Ms. Melissa Reed, Vice President for Public Affairs for the Planned Parenthood Action Fund of North Carolina. She's also in Chapel Hill. Nice to have you with us.
Nice to be here. Good morning.
Good morning. And in our studio is Melba Newsom, Associate Director of Development for Planned Parenthood Health Systems of Charlotte. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And if you'd like to join our conversation, email charlottetalks@wfae.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Quite often, Planned Parenthood is accused of being on a crusade to get women to have abortions. And I know you're going to say that is not the case. So how would you describe your mission, Cecile?
Well, as you sort of illustrated, we started nearly 100 years ago to make sure that women had access to reproductive health care, and that's what we do today. We actually have about 3 million patients every year come to Planned Parenthood for a whole variety of health care services, and in fact, many women who come to Planned Parenthood, that's their only doctor visit all year. So we do their well woman checkup, we do their cancer screenings, and if they want family planning, provide that as well. In fact, 1 in 5 women in this country have been to Planned Parenthood at some point in their lifetime, and we're really proud of the care that we provide.
Define family planning. If a woman comes to you for family planning, or you decide that's what that person needs, what is it exactly?
Well, I mean, we don't decide what someone needs. Patients decide themselves, you know, what services they want, but we provide a full range of birth control. And, you know, so for many women, that is oral contraceptives, birth control pills, but we're proud of the fact that we're really the experts on all the various types of birth control options for women, and there are many now. And one of the things, actually, Mike, that I think is so important that we've worked on very hard for the last few years was to make sure that birth control was covered under the Affordable Care Act, and now more than 26 million women in this country can access birth control services for no cost, whether at Planned Parenthood or anywhere else. And in fact, I just saw the numbers for 2013. Women in America saved $483 million on birth control costs because of it being covered under the Affordable Care Act. And that's really great. As far as women's health, it means it can help prevent unintended pregnancy and help women plan their families.
And I guess one of the unintended consequences of having that included in the Affordable Care Act is the fact that there are people fighting that now. Hobby Lobby comes to mind. They don't want to have to pay insurance premiums for insurance coverage that includes birth control. What do you think the outcome of that situation and others might be?
Well, so that your listeners might, in case they don't know about this case, it's a case that was argued before the Supreme Court this spring. And really the question was whether a for-profit company can decide that they don't want to provide birth control coverage as part of their health insurance plan. We believe really strongly that women should have the right to make their own decisions about whether they want to use birth control, and it shouldn't be an option taken away by their employer. That case will actually be, we are expecting a decision any day now. It'll probably come out this month. But regardless of the decision in the Hobby Lobby case, again, millions of women are already benefiting from no-cost birth control. And it really is a, to me, that's a huge advance if, in fact, we want to do something about unintended pregnancy in this country, which, they, you know, the vast majority of Americans do.
Planned Parenthood is a worldwide organization. In how many countries do you operate? And is your mission the same in all of those countries, or does it vary depending upon the need?
Well, Planned Parenthood, we are part of an international Planned Parenthood Federation. And yes, there are folks working on family planning issues all across the globe because, of course, women everywhere want access to affordable health care and to help have the assistance they need to plan their families. So I don't think the mission is really different. Of course, situations differ across the world. Unfortunately, in the United States, even though we have made so many advances in medicine, we still have a very, very high rate of unintended pregnancy and teen pregnancy. So there's a lot of work still to do here, not only for Planned Parenthood, but for folks who are concerned about women's health.
Planned Parenthood is kind of a lightning rod organization for people on the right. Do you meet that kind of controversy in other parts of the world?
You know, actually, the vast majority of people, not only around the world, but even in the United States, really believe that women should have access to health care and be able to make their own decisions about pregnancy and childbearing. So, unfortunately, I do think there are some folks who still want to make women's health care access a political issue. But for most women in America, it's not a political issue. It's a health care issue. In fact, even though I know you mentioned some of the continuing controversy around birth control, the fact is 99% of women in America use birth control at some point in their lifetime. And so for women, getting access to no-cost birth control is a huge advance.
Cecile Richards, in addition to being president of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America, you're also president of the Planned Parenthood Action Fund. And Melissa Reed, who is sitting next to you up there in Chapel Hill, is the vice president of public affairs for that fund in North Carolina. What is the fund and what is its purpose, Melissa?
Well, this is an arm of our organization that works in the political arena to make sure that women's health candidates who support access to women's health are elected to office. In North Carolina, under the leadership of Tom Tillis and Senator Phil Berger and Governor McCrory, we have seen unprecedented attacks on women's access to health care. And so we are working to mobilize voters across the state to make sure that we elect candidates who will support access to women's health.
You know, for years, abortion seemed to be little more than a political football or a hot potato that was tossed back and forth. It seemed to be an issue that had been decided, but one that certainly worked as a hot-button issue for certain constituencies on both the left and the right. And now it seems that there may be inroads into making abortion less available to women across the country, despite laws that permit it. In the last 3 years, you say, there have been more abortion restrictions passed by the states than in the entire previous decade. What's driving that? Why now?
Well, I think what we're seeing, Mike, is that across the country in the 2010 elections, really the Tea Party wing of the Republican Party gained enormous influence in state legislatures in Congress. Again, I don't think they represent mainstream Republican values. I think they represent a point of view that women should sort of go back, whether it's access to safe and legal abortion or even access to birth control. So that's what we're seeing, is that state legislatures, who I don't really believe represent the mainstream, either of the Democratic or Republican parties, are passing very extreme legislation against women. And unfortunately, we've seen that here in North Carolina as well. On the other hand, we've also seen hundreds and thousands of folks mobilize in the state of North Carolina who are absolutely not going to let the state go backwards when it comes to women's rights and women's access to health care.
Hey, you call what's been done in North Carolina a series of sneak attacks on women's health, education, Medicaid, and voting rights, which you say are out of touch with the majority of North Carolinians. How do you know that they're out of touch with the majority of North Carolinians, since the majority in the state Senate and the House and the governor's office are all occupied by Republicans?
What we found was that when these attacks started happening is that men and women across the state got mobilized and got angry. And they reached out to their elected officials through mail, through constituent visits. They rallied at the Capitol. They came to Moral Mondays and turned those crowds into a sea of pink. Overnight at the sneak attack, which was which happened the week of July 4th, they mobilized overnight. 600 people packed the legislature within 12 hours to voice their disapproval and their anger that these attacks were happening to women in North Carolina. They continued to rally all summer long. And what we found was in the polling that was subsequent to these attacks, that the polling numbers and approval ratings for the legislature and for the governor dropped precipitously. And that was completely based on these attacks. And what was also interesting was the polling showed that it was regardless of party, that men and women, Democrat, Republican, or independent, thought these sneak attacks were wrong, that they were wrong for North Carolina, they were the wrong issue for our elected officials to be focusing on, and that we needed not to inhibit access to health care.
Why do you call them sneak attacks?
Well, we call them sneak attacks because on the evening of July 2nd, without any notice whatsoever to the public or even to the other members of the legislature, a bill that had not been seen before was introduced in committee. It was not on the agenda. No one had had a chance to read it. I got a text from a friend while I was at home cooking dinner with my family that this was happening. I zoomed to the legislature in Raleigh. By the time I got there, it had passed out of committee and was on the Senate floor. Once again, they took this up without notice. It was July 2nd. There was very few people there. It was late at night. And they passed it on the Senate floor, second reading, and brought it back the next morning. So that's why I call it a sneak attack, is they did this without any notice. The bill was in a former Sharia law bill where they had stripped out the original language and put just a whole host of abortion restrictions in there. And the sneak attack didn't stop with the Senate. When the bill passed out of the Senate, and went to the House, they did the same thing. The House stripped out a motorcycle safety bill, put a whole host of abortion restrictions in there. The bill was put into committee without even notice to the chairperson of the committee. He did not even know this bill was coming up on his agenda that morning. We found out from a member of the House via his Twitter feed that it was coming up. Again, we raced to the committee room to speak out against it. So these were the kinds of backhanded attacks that they were making because, quite frankly, they knew that the people of North Carolina wouldn't support these restrictions.
And much of North Carolina is Republican. If you believe the red-blue state maps that you see on TV, and Melba Newsom, who's with Planned Parenthood here in Charlotte, we live in Mecklenburg County is a Democratic county.
Yes, it is.
Are you hearing similar things that are being said this morning from constituents, from people who come to you for services? Do they feel as though they are under attack?
Yes, they do, because so many people, one of the largest concerns is the refusal to expand Medicaid, which doesn't make any sense because it was fully funded by the federal government. And even other Republican states have expanded Medicaid because they realize there's a benefit for the state and for the community financially and providing health care to 500,000 people. So people seem to feel that a lot of this is ideological. It doesn't make sense, and they're very upset about it.
We'll come back to that Medicaid rejection of Medicaid money from the federal government a little bit later on in the program. We're talking with Planned Parenthood. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Donald Hack Diamonds, serving Charlotte for over 30 years with fine diamonds, engagement rings, custom design, and jewelry for all occasions. Now at our new Charlotte location, Morrowcroft Village, and DonaldHack.com. Well, guess what? The summer movie season has already started and already produced some surprises for studios trying to pack you into theaters and rake in the big bucks. Just this weekend, a small film, The Fault in Our Stars, about two young people, edged out a Tom Cruise action film, Edge of Tomorrow, much to the chagrin of many in Hollywood. So what might the rest of the summer hold? And how will these movies, blockbusters or not, Well, how will they do? Are they worth seeing? We'll find out tomorrow when we bring in our trio of movie critics at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, General Motors faces more than 80 lawsuits related to defective ignition switches. Last week, it announced 4 new recalls. What's ahead for GM, its customers, and its management?
As always, you're invited to join the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Planned Parenthood with the national president of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America, Cecile Richards. She joins us from a studio in Chapel Hill. She'll be in Charlotte tonight for an event at the Larry Elder Gallery, information about which is on our website at WFAE.org. Also with us is Melissa Reed, Vice President of Public Affairs for Planned Parenthood's Action Fund of North Carolina, and Melba Newsom, Associate Director of Development for Planned Parenthood Health Systems of Charlotte. The state's rejection of the Medicaid funds offered by the federal government to fill that kind of donut hole created by the Affordable Care Act, which the Medicaid funds would have gone into to shore up, to provide money for people who couldn't afford certain drugs or services despite the Affordable Care Act, has caused some consternation among people, particularly poorer people in the state, because they thought the Affordable Care Act, many of them, would solve their access to health care problems. And because of our turning down Medicaid funds from the federal government, it hasn't. But the governor told me on this program, and I believe several legislators have told me on this program, that they turned it down because it's not free money. It was going to be free money for the first 2 or 3 years, and then North Carolina would have to have picked up the tab, and there is no money to pick up that tab. What do you say to that?
That's not true. It's fully funded for the first 3 years, and after that, 90% is funded. So how can we justify turning down funds that are going to go to other states? We're paying for that money. Our taxpayers are putting that money in, and we're not getting it back. And what happens to it's a burden on the hospitals who would now have to treat these people without getting any kind of reimbursement that Medicaid expansion would have paid for. It doesn't make economic sense. It's just part of the rejection of anything dealing with the Affordable Care Act. And even other Republican governors have acknowledged that this is something that's needed, and it doesn't make sense to leave that money on the table.
And how has that impacted people so far?
Well, we see people in our clinic. We see 5,000 people a year in the clinic here in Charlotte, and a lot of them come to us because we give high-quality, low-cost health care. We see people without taking into consideration their legal status, or we serve an underserved community, and a lot of those people would have more opportunities for health care if the Medicaid had been expanded as we'd hoped. And so they're just people coming to us looking for services, and we try to provide that in a non-judgmental environment.
And when they come to you for health care, what kinds of health care are they coming for?
We give screenings, cancer screenings, breast exams, family planning, pap smears, the kind of things that you would go to your general practitioner for, mm-hmm. that at a rate that they can't afford. It's not a sliding scale, but we have reduced costs for our healthcare services.
So we were talking, you were talking a little while ago, the three of you, about these sneak attacks perpetrated on North Carolina by the legislature in the way that they come up with bills that have no notice. In fact, in North Carolina, the law does not require legislative committees to post agendas. They have to say when they're going to meet and where they're going to meet, but they don't have to say what's going to be on the agenda. And that could be viewed in some circles, I suppose, as a sneak attack, because if they have a plan to do something or not do something, they don't tell you, and you're not there for the meeting to let them know of your displeasure or your support. What has happened to women's health care as a result of these so-called sneak attacks?
Well, it's been very detrimental to the women in North Carolina. Under Tom Tillis's leadership, back in his very first term, he introduced a budget to defund Planned Parenthood, and this was a amendment that would have prohibited us from providing family planning, preventive health care, life-saving cancer screenings to the women that we serve in North Carolina. Fortunately, we were able to beat that back in federal court. It was an unconstitutional amendment, and we were able to continue to provide those important services
to
women.
What made it unconstitutional?
Well, it was called a bill of attainder. And what a bill of attainder is, just sort of in layman's terms, is when the legislature tries to punish an entity. Here they were trying to punish Planned Parenthood through the legislative process instead of through the courts. And that's not how our system works in our United States. And so that's prohibited by the Constitution.
And how much funding does Planned Parenthood get from North Carolina and from the individual states?
Nothing. Well, currently in North Carolina, we don't receive any funding from the state.
So when you say he tried to defund Planned Parenthood,
right.
What if we don't get any money? If you don't get any money from the state, how could he have defunded it?
At that time, we did receive funding.
I see.
And we, as I mentioned, we fought that back, and we were successful in court. Then they came back the following year, and in Speaker Tillis's budget, he changed the language so that it would pass constitutional muster to say, well, we're going to keep all the money for the state health departments and not grant it out to other entities. So what Planned Parenthood did was we applied for those Title 10 dollars for our family planning for low-income women. We applied directly to the federal government and received a grant in that way. And so that helped us enabled us to continue to provide that low-cost care.
If the state had done that, if they were able to do what you say Tom Tillis wanted to do, and the money had all gone to state health organizations, would the women and the men, because you serve women and men, and you serve children as well, would they have gotten the same kind and the same amount of care that they can receive now because of Planned Parenthood?
Well, what we found was certainly those people could have gone to the county health departments. But when we reached out to the county health departments, we found that their waiting lists for a family planning appointment were sometimes as long as 45 days. So for a woman that needs birth control, or a man who has experienced symptoms of an STD, or a woman who's found a lump in her breast, 45 days is just too long and it's
unacceptable. Why are your wait times less?
Because we have fully staffed health centers across the state, we have really compatible hours with people's lives. We have evening and weekend hours, and we're able to see people that very same day. Often we take walk-in appointments, or certainly within just a day or two, we could have seen those people.
I mean, I know you probably feel as though you're under attack in certain circles, and you are a hot-button issue. Your existence is a hot-button issue in many circles, political circles. Is it because of abortion, or is it because of other services that you provide?
This is Cecile here. I'll kind of jump in. It's interesting because you raised this issue of our beginning. I mean, we started before birth control was even legal in the United States. So in some ways, you could say we've always been controversial.
Yeah.
The topic of women's access to basic health care, I think, is what it's about. And the reason why some of our opponents go after Planned Parenthood is because we're the biggest provider for women of affordable reproductive care in the country. I think your question earlier was really important, whether it's about the state of North Carolina or more broadly, is that what we're seeing increasingly is politicians, and I think Tom Tillis is a very good example, who are putting their own political agenda ahead of the needs of women and men and families for basic health care. And we've seen in other states, and unfortunately my home state of Texas, where Governor Rick Perry was very similarly decided to sort of go after Planned Parenthood. And as a result, dozens of health centers closed, not Planned Parenthood's, but other ones as well, because he cut off all the family planning, the women's health program in the state of Texas. It's this is what we're seeing the reaction against, is that there are politicians who, for whatever reason, have chosen to kind of put their own agenda, a political agenda, ahead of the needs of folks in their state. And to the point earlier about the Medicaid expansion, I mean, this is 500,000 people in North Carolina who need health care. And frankly, It's the state turning back $65.4 million that they would get in the first 6 years to pay for that health care. Now, one way or the other, that health care is going to get paid for. So why in the world the state of North Carolina and Tom Tillis would oppose covering 500,000 people who were in need of health care? That's surely politics.
Planned Parenthood provides an array of services, which we brought up, including sex education and contraception. And there are those who oppose abortion who might ask, why isn't providing contraception enough? Why must abortion be used as contraception?
First of all, this is Melba, and I just want to say we don't use abortion as contraceptives. So people who oppose abortion, I always ask, then why don't you support Planned Parenthood? Because Planned Parenthood is all about prevention, and we have prevented more abortions than any other organization in the world, I would say, because people only need abortions if they get pregnant. And so when you give proper information, access to contraceptives, unintended pregnancies go down. And 3% of what we do is abortion. So, but that's what everybody wants to focus on because it can get people ginned up to be angry at us. But when you see the same politicians who oppose abortion also stripping the cost of contraceptives from the care that the county and the state provides, because there was a bill, I don't know what happened to it, Melissa can speak to that, where they wanted to stop paying for contraceptives for poor women. So what does that lead to? That leads to more intended pregnancies, unintended pregnancies, and then they also want to cut resources for poor people. So it just seems like it's another way to attack people in need, because it doesn't make sense to oppose abortion, education, contraceptives.
I told all three of you that I have a piece of paper that came in as an email with 20 questions about Planned Parenthood, obviously from somebody who does not like Planned Parenthood. But you mentioned that poor people are served by your organization, and that's true. That's why you are, that's partially right. Why you exist. And they wanted to know why most of your clinics are located in poor areas where you prey on poor people. That's not what you do?
We don't. I've never seen anyone in Planned Parenthood stand on a corner and drag people into the clinic. We want to be where the community we serve is.
And why do you think people view it as preying on poor people then?
I think that's just propaganda, because when you look at what we do, it's just not borne out. In Charlotte, we don't provide abortion services because we don't have the facilities, but we're still that when people talk about us, they don't talk about all of the teens that we reach, all of the education that we provide, all of the poor people that we see and help who have no other means of getting health care. And they want to act as if we're doing something that's unconscionable when it's quite the opposite.
How many abortions did Planned Parenthood perform or responsible for performing nationwide in the last year?
I don't know that.
Do you know, Cecilia?
I don't have the number here in front of me. I mean,
is it in the thousands, the hundreds of thousands? I mean, what is it? Do you have any idea at all?
I mean, it's definitely in the thousands, and we are. I want to be clear. We think it's very important that women in this country have access to safe and legal abortion. As I hope many of your listeners probably don't remember back in the days before abortion was legal in this country, but before Roe versus Wade was decided by the Supreme Court, young, healthy women were routinely dying in emergency rooms. What's important to us is to make sure that women have access to family planning, as was said earlier, access to sex education, access to preventive health care, because that is the easiest way and the most important way to help women prevent an unintended pregnancy in the first place.
Planned Parenthood has been critical of legislation here in North Carolina that has increased state spending on abstinence-only programs. You not only provide contraceptive information to your clients, you also counsel them on STDs and HIVs. So isn't HIV contagion, isn't abstinence the best way to avoid all of that? Pregnancy and STDs and HIV?
Abstinence is great, but thinking abstinence only, where you don't teach anything else, is not realistic. It's just not realistic. And so you have to let everybody know what's available and the truth about sexuality education. And when you just say to someone, just stay abstinent and don't tell them anything beyond that, I believe that's setting up them for...
Is abstinence an option that you present when you talk about contraception and also about sex education?
Yes, we do.
Absolutely, yeah. I'll speak here just from the national point of view, it's the same here in North Carolina. And we provide more sex education than any organization in the country. We stress abstinence, absolutely, but we also stress information about contraception and preventing the spread of disease. And it's true in every study I have seen that providing young people information about birth control, about STDs, is actually helps them delay being sexually active until they are ready, and it helps them prevent unintended pregnancy and getting infected. And that's, you know, I talk to parents all the time. We do an enormous amount of work educating parents who want sort of the tools to talk to their young people and their kids about sex. This is something where I feel like by just closing the conversation and telling young people, we're only going to tell you, don't have sex, eventually, at some point in their life, they're going to, and they're going to need information. And it's better that we provide it in an open, honest way than have them make what are sometimes, you know, bad decisions and engage in what we think of as really risky behavior.
Are you one
and
of
I
the,
say that as a mom.
And I want to also point out that this is also something that is widely supported by parents across North Carolina. When we were working to restore comprehensive sex education to North Carolina's public school system, we found that 90% of parents of school-age children in this state were very supportive of having this type of information as part of a healthy living curriculum in our public schools.
Hmm. And given the fact that some things cannot be discussed in the public schools with regard to sex education, is Planned Parenthood one of the few places outside of the home, of course, that these kids can get this information?
We think so.
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, we think so. That's why we focus a lot on education and our peer mentoring program. We have a community educator that goes out and talks to teens and trains them to talk to their peers. And it's been very effective because we know that that's needed. And now I think even more so, Melissa can speak to this, but there was a bill that was proposed to make sexuality education opt in instead of opt out, which is just another barrier. And we've had great success in reducing teen pregnancy, but I think that will maybe reverse some of that. And we need to stay focused on keeping information available to anyone who needs it.
I know that Cecile Richards has to leave us in 30 seconds to go to another appointment, so I'll say thank you for being part of the program today. Cecile is president of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America and of the Planned Parenthood Action Fund. And when we come back, we'll continue with Melissa Reed, also with Planned Parenthood, and Melba Newsom with the Charlotte Division of Planned Parenthood. And we'll continue our conversation about the myriad issues we've already been discussing. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Bradley Arendt Bolt Cummings, LLP, a full-service law firm serving the construction industry in Charlotte and throughout the nation, partnering with clients through all phases of a project. Details at babc.com. General Motors faces more than 80 lawsuits related to defective ignition switches, and last week it announced 4 new recalls. Diane and her guests will talk about what's ahead for GM, its customers, and its management coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation, now's the time, and you can get through to us at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks and on Twitter and Facebook. And incidentally, our guest today, Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood, will be in town tonight at the Larry Elder Gallery in South End for the North Carolina Women Are Watching Action Fund event. You can find information about that on our website as well at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
I was going to grad school in Michigan, so my mom gave me her 1997 Lexus. just like the car got me through grad school. In some ways, those shows got me through grad school. Like sometimes listening to This American Life was like the highlight of my week. So things have really come full circle. My name is Jessica Broom, and I donated my 1997 Lexus to public radio.
Call 1-866-789-8627
or go to WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking with Planned Parenthood in advance of Cecile Richards' appearance tonight at Larry Elder Gallery, about which we have information on our website. She is the president of Planned Parenthood, the national organization. With us is Melissa Reed, vice president of public affairs for the Planned Parenthood Action Fund of North Carolina, and Melba Newsom, associate director of development for Planned Parenthood Health Systems of Charlotte. We have an email from Jennifer on Facebook. It is unfortunate that our government representatives will fight for our veterans to receive timely services, and rightly so, but not its female citizens. A 45-day wait for a doctor's appointment to the VA is unacceptable. The same is true for county health services. Well, the VA waits, it turns out, have been much worse than that. And I would argue that government officials up until the last few weeks have not been pushing or fighting for veterans to receive services. Would you say the situation is comparable?
Well, I think...
I'm not sure.
Go ahead, Melissa.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not sure it's comparable. But what I do think is that we have a healthcare crisis in our nation and in our state, and that instead of focusing on the real needs of citizens and making sure that public health is addressed in a powerful and sustainable way, that we are looking and attacking access to care where we don't need to and making cuts in other areas that are unnecessary.
How do you explain people being both opposed to abortion? I can understand people being opposed to abortion, but how do you explain them being opposed to that and to contraception and to a great degree education about sex?
Well, 99% of all women in the United States use contraception at some point in their lives, and that includes Catholic women as well. And I think that what we have found in polling both in North Carolina and nationwide is that actually the majority of citizens believe that women should have access to safe and legal abortion care. Now, I think what we're seeing is that these attacks have made people become more aware, and what they fully believe, and even if they themselves have mixed feelings about abortion, that what they do know in their heart of hearts is that those are very personal and private medical decisions. And Tom Tillis and Governor McCrory and Senator Berger have no place in that doctor's office with those women.
Well, I know the plan. Go ahead, Melba.
Well, I'm not convinced that people are opposed to contraceptions. I think it's a political issue that people mm-hmm. are using to gin up their base. They've got a small.
Well, then some people do oppose it because there would be no base for it if they didn't.
Some people
it.
Do, but I think that that's a fringe. And so the mm-hmm. political people realize I can get people revved up over this. And so they take that tack that now there's something wrong with contraceptives. If you had told me that 10 years ago that there would be all of this effort attacking people with access to birth control, I wouldn't have believed it. But now that's growing, and it's kind of an incremental approach to chipping away at women's rights. Also, this is economic, too, because denying contraceptives will, from the legislature, to keep it from being in insurance plans and things like that, will mostly affect poor women. And it's another attack on the poor, if you ask me. When you look at some of the people who are railing against contraceptives, for instance, the Hobby Lobby people, he has 3 children, and he's been married 50 years. Do you not think there was some contraception going on there, some birth control and family planning? But now it's attacked on. We're opposed to this. I don't really believe it. I actually think that it's just one more. It's cynical pandering to a base and to act like there's something immoral that the other side is doing.
When a company is told that they have to provide contraception through the insurance plan they're providing for their employees, What does that do to the cost of the premium? Does anybody know? Does it substantially increase the cost?
No, it does
not increase the cost of the premium. This is basic health care for women. No other type of health care is carved out like this. And it's quite frankly unacceptable.
Do these plans pay for contraception for men as well, or is it just for women?
No, they pay it for men as just like any other type of health care. And I think it's also important to know that women use contraceptives not just for birth control needs, but they use it to regulate their menses. Some women use them for dermatologic reasons. There are many reasons that women use birth control. It's basic health care, as Melba said. The majority of citizens support access to birth control. And this is a benefit that these employees earn through their work for their employers. And bosses do not get to decide whether or not their employees use birth control or not.
One of you mentioned something that has been said many thousands of times in these conversations, and that is women's reproductive rights, that politicians do not belong in the doctor's office deciding what a woman's right should be with regard to pregnancy. But what about, I have to ask the question because you brought it up, but what about the unborn child's rights?
What we focus on is what Roe, the decision in Roe said, was that a woman has the right to an abortion up until viability. And after viability, then they also have to take into account the developing child that woman is carrying. And I think no one would argue that is appropriate. However, Tom Tillis and and his ilk in our current legislature, they want to confer full rights, personhood rights, on fertilized eggs, just as you and I have today. It's so extreme that even the voters of Mississippi rejected that in a ballot initiative. It would have far-reaching impacts, not only to banning contraception and abortion, but it would ban in vitro fertilization and stem cell research and impact all kinds of inheritance and tax laws in our state.
Well, it does bring up the question of when life begins. And I know that Cecile Richards, who is the president of the national organization, was asked I forgot who asked her this question, but she was asked, when does life begin? And she allegedly said, I don't know that that's really relevant to the conversation. I don't want to put words in her mouth. So when does life begin?
Well, again, I just want to say that the holding in Roe says that the state has an interest in protecting life at viability, and I support that. When life begins is not an answer that I can make or a priest can make or a doctor can make, but I think you have to set a timeline based on development of a pregnancy, and the Supreme Court has found that that's a viability.
Go ahead, Mike.
Mike, I just want to say we keep rolling back these questions because it started out there was just this it started out being opposition to late-term abortion. Then it moved back abortion, you know, to earlier in the pregnancy. And, well, now we're at the point they were opposed to the morning after pill, which prevents you from getting pregnant. It doesn't terminate. If you're already pregnant, it does nothing. It doesn't terminate a pregnancy, but they're opposed to that. Then it became opposed to you even preventing pregnancy through birth control, through planning. So if we think that there's some level where they will be satisfied with curtailing reproductive rights, we're mistaken, because it is already a moving target, and the more concessions that are made, the more they go after.
You have called the efforts on the part of certain Republican lawmakers to control these rights cynical. And political pundits have pointed out on many occasions that the Republican Party has a difficult time. They're going to reach a point where they are unelectable because they're not supporting women, they're not supporting minorities, they're not supporting the Hispanics and the Latinos who come in here legally and illegally. If that is true, have you spoken to Tom Tillis about this? Have you had a chance to meet with him and his cohorts in Raleigh to talk about your feelings about what is being done?
I've been to more Monday protests.
Yeah. Well, personally, you know, we have tried on many occasions to have meetings with the speaker. We have set them up time and time again to no avail. We have met with members of his staff to no avail.
And when you say no avail, what does that mean? Simply that they are not going to change their
mind? We were not given a meeting.
Okay.
We were even shown out of his office at one point, and this was far before the Moral Monday protests, when we were just two women who work for Planned Parenthood who wanted to talk to the speaker about our concerns and were shown out of his office.
How do you explain that? Not only are you're not just two women, you are representatives of a major organization. Why would they not entertain a 15-minute conversation?
Because they are completely dismissive of women's health in our state. They have no interest in it.
But they all have wives. They all have daughters. Not all of them, but some of them have daughters.
That's
Did
right.
You hear
but they also want to make health care decisions for women that they don't know. When Governor McCrory was elected, we immediately reached out to his campaign office, even before he took office. Again, time and time again, left messages, sent emails, tried to contact people to meet with him, would not meet with us. When these sneak attacks happened and the restrictions to abortion made it to his desk, we had tried a dozen times to get a meeting or to talk to him by phone or even someone from his staff without success. And instead of having a reasonable meeting with us, he came across the street and handed us a plate of cookies as we were rallying in front of his mansion. And that just shows the kind of condescension that our state leaders have.
Would you like me
women.
To tell you what he told me about that incident, the governor?
Yeah, please. Yeah, let me know.
I asked the governor about that, and he told me that he saw people protesting outside the gates of the governor's mansion, didn't know what they were there for or who they were, and he thought it would be nice to just go out there and say hello and offer them some cookies.
Well, I know that's not true. We had lots of signs. We had been there for 2 days with signs. It had lots of coverage. We had sent emails and appointment requests. So I think he was vastly misrepresenting.
So
what
you're saying
happened.
The governor claims to not have been cruel, but just clueless. I don't think either one of those is a good option.
Let's move on to some other things that Planned Parenthood does. I know that we've talked a little bit about your support of the Affordable Care Act and education about women's bodies, about sex and pregnancy prevention, STDs, breast cancer screenings, education about health, other cancer screenings, prenatal services, adoption referrals, teen sexual health, education about LGBTQ and issues in providing health care for high poverty populations. How many of these activities are either considered controversial or are coming under attack?
I think a lot of them are. I mean, I don't think by the general population they're considered controversial. But I think we have politicians who have ginned up that there's something wrong with what we're doing, just where education is a bad thing. Educating the people they've introduce bills to misinform people about the effects of abortion, which is not true. Now the schools have to teach something that is demonstrably false. So I think when you can make an issue out of something and it goes to benefit you politically, a lot of times they will do that.
Who are the majority of your clients, your patients?
The majority of our patients, they are ages 18 to about 28, and they are primarily uninsured and underinsured women. Although, as you had said earlier, we do see men and provide health care services for men as well as young people.
Anthony emails, there is a whole segment of the population that, given all the handouts they receive, truly believe that goods and services are somehow free. They are not. All this said, I have no issue with birth control or a woman's right to choose. I just don't want to pay for it.
Well, who's asking him to? When we talk about the Affordable Care Act, no one's taxes went up as a result of that. So we are paying for tax cuts for the wealthy, though, because that money came from somewhere, and it came from providing services to the constituents at the expense of many to the benefit of a few. So I don't see anybody complaining about that.
And most of the money for Planned Parenthood comes from
where? We raise it from our supporters. That's what we're, we're dependent on that.
D emails, Planned Parenthood helped me with my headstrong daughter. They were able to communicate with her in a way that I, as her father, could not. You have this program that you alluded to. We only have a few minutes left called the called Teens Taking Action. This is
yes.
a peer-to-peer mentoring service mm-hmm. in the area of sex education. How does it work?
Our community educator trains teens to talk to their peers, and it's very effective because they are more willing to listen to someone their own age and get information from them.
Do they trust those kids to know what they're talking about?
Well, that's why we put a lot of effort into training them to make sure that they know what they're talking about. For instance, we were at UNCC at a health fair, and the director and I were trying to hand out information and condoms to some of the kids, and they didn't want to take it from us because it was like, I don't want my mom handing me, you know, a condom. But when the teens were talking to them, they were very receptive. And we've just found that to be a very effective way of communicating information.
And not only do you talk about sex and educate them about sex, they're also covering topics like self-esteem and
yes.
substance abuse and body image. And that does it not relate to sexual activity, reduce sexual activity in many cases?
Yes, absolutely.
Elba Newsom is the Associate Director of Development for the Planned Parenthood Systems of Charlotte, and Melissa Reed is Vice President of Public Affairs for Planned Parenthood Action Fund of North Carolina. Earlier with us was the National President of both the National Organization and the Planned Parenthood Action Fund, Cecile Richards. Thank you all for the hour. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.